This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Wow, a beautiful Monday here in Portland. I hope it is for you. Congressman Ro Khanna will be with us in the second hour of the program, taking your calls for the whole hour. So at the end of this hour, get ready. Ryan Grimm is going to drop by in the third hour. He's got a new book out called The Mueller Papers, and we're going to really do a deep dive into, you know, what's up with all that. My question for our first hour, Trump's budget is out and or is about to come out, but we know the broad outline of it. And it's going to do just extraordinary damage to red state America, to by and large, to working class white people, the people who voted for Donald Trump. It's going to do just extraordinary damage to them. And he wants to cut $1.1 trillion. This is over a 10-year period. $1.1 trillion from Medicaid. And Medicaid is the health care program that in those states that have done Medicaid expansion that is available to the working poor. Medicaid is, in that context, kind of a subsidy for McDonald's and Walmart and all those other companies that pay really, really low wages, because if you make so little that you qualify for Medicaid, then, you know, you work for basically Trump's America. And so, you know, the question that I'm asking, actually, let me get right to this. Eugene Robinson of the Washington Post over the weekend wrote that essentially Trump's supporters are the stupidest, most gullible people on earth, right? He said, quote, he apparently believes his loyal supporters are the dumbest, most gullible people on earth. We'll see if he's right. And then he goes through the list of, you know, lies Trump has told and promises that he's broken. Mexico's not paying for the wall. The trade deficit has gone up. The tax cut for working people didn't happen. Korea hasn't denuclearized. He hasn't replaced the Affordable Care Act with something better. No infrastructure, no drain the swamp. But when you look at this budget, $327 billion being cut from anti-poverty programs. These are programs that are keeping a lot of rural America alive. Now, yeah, they may be big among, you know, African Americans in the inner cities, which is pretty much all Republicans want to talk about when they're talking about these programs. But the fact of the matter is, more white people are on food stamps than black people or Hispanic people. More white people are taking discounted housing. More white people, I mean, you know, it's just, he wants to cut $207 billion out of federally guaranteed student loan programs. He wants to cut $200 billion out of the federal retirement programs. I mean, the Democrats have said this thing is dead on arrival. It's going to lock in trillion-dollar-a-year budgets forever. Well, at least until there's a Democratic president. And then, of course, the two Santa Claus theory kicks in, and the Republicans all start screaming about, oh, my God, it's a budget deficit. We can't have this. You got to quick cut Social Security. Even though that has nothing to do with the budget. You know, Harry Truman called this out years ago. Back in 1948, it was October 13th, in fact, 1948, in St. Paul, Minnesota, Harry Truman was running for president. The election was, about 3 weeks later. And in St. Paul, Minnesota, Harry Truman had this to say about the GOP. Okay, it's going to take just a second to cue it up. Give me a shout when you got it ready, Nate. We'll do it. But basically, you know, what Truman and what we're seeing right now is, you know, meet the new Republicans, same as the old Republicans. This is where I was going with that. And in fact, where I'm going after that is that Richard Nixon and Pat Buchanan basically laid out the campaign strategy that Donald Trump is using. I mean, just very straightforward. In fact, there's a piece by Lawrence Jurdom about this in today's Washington Post, how Richard Nixon charted the path for Donald Trump's reelection. And it goes back to Pat Buchanan. Pat Buchanan was Richard Nixon's speechwriter. And, you know, Nixon ran on the platform of, quote, putting and keeping America first. That was Nixon's slogan. This was in 1992. And his themes were construction of the wall on the Mexican border, a renegotiation of our trade deals, and demanding that our allies take greater responsibility for their own defense. Sound familiar? This was what Pat Buchanan laid out for Richard Nixon. And then again in 72, Nixon, you know, this was Nixon's shtick, right? So then Trump comes along. Oh, and Buchanan said, you know, label the Democrats as socialists. Now in 72, Nixon was running against George McGovern. And Buchanan wrote a memo saying, we're going to have a real problem with George McGovern. He is, quote, a candid, honest, straightforward citizen politician. He was also a war hero. Flew 30-some-odd bombing missions and was shot down and rescued his crew and the whole thing. George McGovern. And so Buchanan, this is from today's Washington Post, Buchanan crafted a plan to undermine McGovern's campaign by portraying him as both an extremist and as a pet of the national liberal establishment. Buchanan told Nixon, quote, you need to scare the hell out of the American people about George McGovern and convince them that his policies would be an utter disaster for the country. Doesn't matter if it's true or not. Call him a socialist. Well, you know, it worked in 72. Nixon beat George McGovern quite badly. Pat Buchanan's playbook actually worked. So the question is, will it work again? Because now we've had, you know, more than 50 years to look at these Republican strategies and realize that they're crazy, they're bunk, they're BS, they're not true. So, you know, is it still going to work, or was, you know, I mean, you know, Harry Truman won re-election in 48 basically saying these things, although he lost in 52 to Dwight Eisenhower. But Dwight Eisenhower wasn't using Pat Buchanan's playbook. Dwight Eisenhower was also kind of running as a Democrat. In fact, right up until just, you know, the year before the election, they didn't know if Eisenhower was going to be a Democrat or Republican. He was just a war hero. And he ran on a campaign of ending the Korean War. He ran on a peace platform. He ran on the Tulsi Gabbard platform. So the question, is it true? Do you think it's absolutely true that Trump supporters are the stupidest, most gullible people on earth? Or are they the victims of billionaire Rupert Murdoch's media empire and Sinclair and, you know, other media empires owned by other multimillionaires and billionaires, basically promoting this kind of big lie? Which is it? You know, what's it going to be? Nate, if we can't get the Harry Truman clip, could you bring me back the transcript so I can read it? So, anyhow, thank you very much. Here's what Harry Truman had to say. And it was pretty straightforward. He said, I've been studying the Republican Party for over 12 years, a close hand in the capital of the United States, and by this time I've discovered where the Republicans stand on most of the issues, and since they won't tell you themselves, I'm going to tell you. They approve of the American farmer, Harry Truman said, but they're willing to help him go broke. They stand four square for the American home, but not for housing. They're strong for labor, but they're stronger for restricting labor's rights. They favor a minimum wage. The smaller the minimum, the better. They endorse educational opportunity for all, but they won't spend money for teachers or schools. They think modern medical care and hospitals are fine for people who can afford them. They approve of Social Security benefits so much that they took them away from almost a million people. They believe in international trade so much that they crippled our trade programs and killed our international wheat agreement. They favor the admission of displaced persons. These are people today we call refugees, immigrants, but only within shameful racial and religious limitations. This is Harry Truman, 1948. They say the TVA is wonderful. This is a government-sponsored program to generate electricity. It's like the Green New Deal, the TVA. But we ought never to try it again. They think the American standard of living is a fine thing so long as it doesn't spread to all Americans. And they admire the government of the United States so much that they would like to buy it. That's Harry Truman. That's what Harry Truman had to say. And, you know, he won election based on that. So are we going to hear Democrats speaking like Harry Truman? Or are they going to be talking more like, I don't know. And are the Trump supporters so stupid that they're going to buy into it this time? Or is it just that they're misinformed? Or what percentage of them are like just really stupid people or really bigoted people versus the people who are, you know, really decent people? And I know a few of them who voted for Trump. I'm not sure they'd vote for him again, but, you know, they voted for him once. How many of those people who actually are thoughtful, who might have voted for Trump based on the lies that he told about what he'd do, will not vote for him again? What do you think?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's 16 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with your calls right after this. And welcome back. Alex in New York City. Hey, Alex, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. On Friday night, I was on the Internet, and I saw an interesting article that no one's talked about, that Donald Trump is getting, that the Trump administration is quietly talking about charging countries that we have bases in 150%.
Right, cost plus 50 is what he calls it.
Exactly, yes.
Spoken like a retail marketer. yeah, we talked about this briefly on the program Friday with, I think it was Luke Vargas, as I recall.
I wasn't listening at that time. I'm sorry about
that. Yeah, it's... You know, there's a good side and a bad side of this, Alex, and I think it's really important to acknowledge both of them rather than just throw our hands up in the air. The bad side is that in many cases, in fact, in probably most cases, the 700 and some odd, I think it's 783 or whatever, the over 700 military bases that we have all around the world are there to protect and represent our own strategic interests. We use our military bases in Germany, for example, to stage our offensives in the Middle East. Now, I'm not in favor of our offensives in the Middle East, although I do think that we need to retain the capacity to intervene should things go really south really fast. But nonetheless, we're using it. You know, the military bases in Germany, many of them, particularly Ramstein, are really more for America than for Germany. And they're not certainly there to protect Germany. You could say the same thing of our South Korean bases, our Japanese bases. So, you know, on the one hand, if we say to these countries, you're going to have to pay, 100, cost plus 50, cost plus 50%, some of those bases that are actually very important to us in the more developed countries in the world, they're going to say, hey, screw you guys, get out of town. And that'll be a problem. Okay, the flip side of it, the upside, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, Alex. The upside of Trump proposing this is that he's actually opening a conversation about whether America should continue to be a worldwide empire. Before World War I, the United Kingdom had over 100 military bases all over the world. They had colonies all over Africa and South Asia. They controlled much of the world. They were a worldwide empire. By the end of World War II, the UK had collapsed down to being basically a country, and they had released all of their foreign vassal states, essentially. And so they had gone from being an empire to being a country. I strongly believe that the United States should do the same, that we should go from being an empire with 700 military bases to being a country with maybe 100 that represent alliances and things, strategic alliances. And I think it's really important for us to have that conversation. So Trump, in his stupid, blundering way, might be initiating that conversation. And if so, I think that's a good thing. What do you think, Alex?
It's a possibility, but there's also another possibility that Trump may be using this as more of a knife to find out really who our, quote, friends are and who will pay. Because the problem is, where's this real money really going to? Is it going to the American? Is it going to go back into the coffers?
Well, it will go to the Treasury so that he could do another tax cut for his billionaire buddies. I mean, we know what his priorities are. But I doubt that he's that smart or that he's thought it out that much. I think this is a campaign ploy for his base. His base sees, foreign bases as a form of foreign aid, and they hate foreign aid. I think that's what it's really all about. Alex, thank you for the call. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Teresa in Bellevue, Washington. Hey, Teresa, thanks for listening to KBCS. Your thoughts?
Oh, hi, Tom. Yeah, this duping of the middle class, I mean, it goes back to Reagan, as you often say, and probably way, way before that.
Well, but, Nixon did it in 72, and it worked for him. You know, I mean, he took down McGovern by just lying about him, calling him a socialist and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, I thought about kind of a variation. You had a brilliant caller a couple weeks ago talking about how to substitute the word democracy for government, because really it's our democracy. And so I thought about that Reagan quote that says, well, how did it go? Like, the government is not the solution to your problems. The government is your problem.
That's correct. That was from his first inaugural address.
Yes.
First thing he had to say to the nation.
And if we substituted the word democracy in there, wouldn't we just have the exact Republican philosophy? I mean, the true one?
Yeah, democracy is not the solution to the people's problems. Democracy is the problem. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. It's the problem for the one percenters and the corporatists.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, Reagan was, that's brilliant, Teresa. Reagan was speaking on behalf of basically the class of people who put him into office, first as governor and then as president.
Yeah, and then they're just proving time and time again they do not like democracy.
Yeah. Very well said. Teresa, thank you. I'm going to, hopefully that'll stick in my brain long enough that I can use it in my next debate with a conservative. Thank you,
cool.
Teresa.
Cool. Okay, great, Tom.
I appreciate it. Great. Thanks for the call. Maine in Chicago. Hey, Maine, thanks for listening to Chicago's Progressive Talk. What's on your mind?
Yeah, how you doing, Tom?
I was
to speak on this here Friday about calling, you know, how we got these labels and how we're getting confused. And I say, you know, like I've been calling myself a democratist for the past couple of months now because I'm you know, definitely not a Republican. Democrats are weak. Independents are just that. They're independent. And libertarians are just as even more crazy than Republicans. So
yeah.
A democratist, you know, he's on democracy. In other words, what I'm talking about is, you know, when they say provide for domestic tranquility, well, you have to promote the general welfare. What is the general welfare? That's food, clothing, shelter, education, all that. That's what the government is supposed to be doing.
And we have been literally since the George Washington administration. He signed the legislation to provide for the care of the poor people in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, and then you have to, in order to... have domestic tranquility in order to be like we're in an uproar. He's starting fires all over the United States. In order for these fires to come out, you have to provide domestic tranquility, and that's one of the things we're fighting here in Chicago for.
You
know, the same thing is for democracy. You know, not just being a Republican or a Democrat. And the majority of the people, not this 30%, which is 35, 40 million, ruling over 200 million people. That's not a democracy. And when I looked in the dictionary for democracy, they said it's the majority that rules over the minority, not the minority ruling over
the majority. And that's why you have democracy in the structure of a republic, and the republic protects the rights of the minorities against the majority, while at the same time the majority typically makes the majority of the decisions. And that's why, you know, I refer to it as a democratic republic. I'm with you. Maine, spot on. Thank you very much for the call. Dan in Waterloo, Canada. Hey, Dan, thanks for watching us on YouTube. Thoughts on combating the right and perhaps lessons from Canada?
Well, I don't know if I have lessons to give you from Canada. I was really wondering your opinion. I see the right taking things to such extremes. And even your last caller said the Democrats are weak. Now, I don't think they're weak, but I think in the face of the way you see the right act, they're willing to act so extreme that they'll lie, hypocrisy means nothing to them.
Right.
Rule breaking means nothing to them. And they'll even go as far as fear mongering to violence to war mongering.
Yeah, demagoguery is a core strategy and has been since Nixon for the Republican Party.
Yeah, so how do you combat all of that without resorting to that? That's my question to you.
Well, the big challenge is calling it out. I think you need to expose it, and frankly, our media does a terrible job of that. And
yes,
tragically, Democrats from the 80s, I mean, after McGovern went down in flames in 72, Democrats got real timid about calling out Republicans, and you know, which is a huge mistake. And you know, Clinton caved in and said, yes, we'll destroy welfare as we know it. Yes, the era of big government is over. Obama had some other challenges. The principal one was he only had 72 days where he controlled a veto-proof Senate. So but he still was able to get, you know, Obamacare done, which is a major, major thing. But, you know, so much more could have been done with a more useful Congress or less obstruction from Mitch McTurtle. But the bottom line is that the Democrats, they need to start taking names and kicking ass the way Harry Truman used to do.
Yeah.
It's just that simple. Dan, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for watching us there in Canada. We'll be back. Boy, Trump supporters, is it possible that Eugene Robinson is right? Quote, Trump apparently believes his loyal supporters are the dumbest, most gullible people on earth. Is Donald Trump right?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Meet the new Republican scam, same as the old Republican scam. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. So the question is, Eugene Robinson right, that Donald Trump's supporters, that Donald Trump believes that his supporters are stupid and gullible? I guess the question really is Donald Trump right in his belief that he can simply lie to people and they will still vote for him? I mean, he lied over 100 times at CPAC. They were still cheering him when he left. You know, meet the new scam, same as the old scam. Paul in Grosse Pointe, Michigan. Hey, Paul, your thoughts on it?
Hey there, Tom.
Hey.
It's interesting to see Donald Trump more from, you know, the establishment conservatism, Bete Noir. If you remember, the National Review article had, a whole issue dedicated to how he should not be the Republican nominee.
Right.
And I think the fact that he has implemented such oligarch-friendly policies shows that the only gullible and stupid voters, unfortunately, are those that work for a living.
Yeah.
I know the 1% have gotten everything they wanted out of him.
Yep.
I mean, and so far. And,
oh, and more.
You know, with all the federal
frankly, I, they, you know, I don't think they expected to get anything close to the kind of tax break they got.
Yeah.
Seriously.
And, and then he's packing more federal judges so that, future.
In their 30s.
Yes. And it'll hurt the working class for years and years to come.
Yeah.
It's really unfortunate.
Yeah, aggressively, he's packing the court with these Federalist Society, right-wing young people, in many cases, literally no experience as a judge, literally, in some cases, no experience as a lawyer. Like Brett Kavanaugh, he's on the Supreme Court, he never even tried a case as a lawyer. I mean, you know, he went from being a political stooge for George W. Bush inside the White House to being on the D.C. Circuit. Bang, just like that, you know, out of law school, go to work for Bush, boom, you're on the D.C. Circuit, now you're on the Supreme Court. Never even stood before a judge and tried a case. And more of these same kinds of people are coming into the system. Kavanaugh, at least, I think, was in his late 40s, early 50s. A lot of these people are in their late 30s and early 40s, and it's just insane what they are doing to the federal judiciary. And where it's going to go. Thanks a lot for the call, Paul. Spot on. Sally in Cadet, Missouri. Hey, Sally, your thoughts?
Oh, hi, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just going to comment about your mention of Medicaid and gutting the Medicaid from earlier. I work in a profession where I see a lot of clients that get Medicaid, and back in 2016, there was a lot of support for President Trump, and in 2018, 2019, I'm seeing less and less.
That's especially interesting.
Since the government shut down, and you know, I'm just seeing a lot of people saying, "Okay, this guy isn't what he said he was." So,
well, I'm wondering if Fox News is even going to report on the fact that Trump is proposing to cut $1 trillion out of Medicaid over the next decade.
I highly doubt it, but I don't watch Fox News, so I won't be able to.
But probably a lot of your patients do, you know, or a lot of people coming to you for care, Medicaid care.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They, you know, it's, you know, it's just very frustrating to them that, you know, some of them voted for them, and now it's they're being affected, you know, quite, you know, especially it was very obvious that that government shut down earlier in the year. So,
yeah, I'm with you.
And so, I thought it was really ironic. You kind of, when I first called in, you were talking about a quote from President Truman. I was like, hey,
right.
Missouri.
So, yeah. Yeah. I still want to play that. You know, Harry Truman had a voice. You know, he knew
very
how
much
to talk back to these people. Sally, thank you for the call. Jules, listening on KPFK, our blowtorch in Los Angeles. You're in Whittier, California, though. Jules, what's up?
I just want to say two things. Number one, Jefferson Thomas said that, you know, the only thing really required of a statesman is honesty. It's the only thing that really, you know, keeps government running. Now, we have this guy Trump in here. If you ever read Shire's Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, did you ever read his account?
Yes, I read part of it while we lived in Germany, the year that we lived in Germany, and most of the rest of it
back. It's an excellent review because you had Mussolini, you had Hitler, you had Stalin, you had all these dictators.
Right.
And in Hitler's case, he surrounded himself with lunatics. Of course, he was a lunatic like Trump. But what we're seeing here is the media is becoming more and more fascistic or something, because they're not really, they're like Goebbels, you know, they're not really reporting what's happening. Now, we all know this. But the point is someone like yourself with a brain, you know, like Kennedy had a brain, Reagan had none, Trump has none, GW had none. You know, if you listen to GW speak, he couldn't put a noun and a verb together in a sentence, right?
Yeah.
And this Trump, he's saying, oh, this next hurricane, it's going to be real wet. You know, these guys are idiots that we're following. A person like yourself should run. You know, I know that you're probably not going to, but a person like yourself needs to run, because without their, you know, this whole business of American imperialism, it goes back to the Romans, okay? Yeah. The Romans started this crap.
Well, that was my point about the bases. I mean, you know, Rome eventually collapsed because they overextended themselves, as did Greece. And empires end one of two ways, one of three ways. They either collapse internally, they collapse externally, typically by being defeated in multiple fronts and wars, or they just unwind the empire. And the latter is what Germany did. Prior to that, you had, arguably Napoleon's France was defeated. Prior to that, you had the collapse of, you had the Spanish Empire for a while, and they just kind of faded out. And you had, before that, the Dutch Empire. It was mostly a trading empire. But you go back to the Greeks and Romans, and you know, those are lessons that we need to be paying attention to. Jules, I need to move along, but thank you for the call. Well said. Van in Gordonsville, Virginia. Hey, Van, what's up?
Talking about socialism and corporate issues that we give them.
Yeah, Van, what I heard was that corporations want subsidies and that they're socialists, too. You're on, Van is on line 5, sure, if you want to find out what's going on with his phone there. It's just not working very well. Peter in Crown Point, Indiana. Hey, Peter, what's on your mind?
Hi, good morning, Tom. I just had, more of a suggestion than a question, but I believe that if the Bernie Sanders campaign were to define democratic socialism as the fulfillment of the founding fathers' vision of providing for the general welfare of the people,
right,
that would give justify or legitimize his policies in a way that would help counter what I think is going to be just an avalanche of negative publicity in terms of using the word socialist.
Yeah. I think right now, for this moment, that this is a problem in as much as it is a problem. that's largely exclusive to Bernie, because he's the only one of the Democrats, to the best of my knowledge, who has embraced the term democratic socialist. Kamala Harris, even Elizabeth Warren, are now saying, no, we believe in regulated capitalism. And, you know, some of the dimensions, some of the elements of socialism, things like Social Security, we're all good with that. But we will not call ourselves socialists. They are backing away from that. And I understand that. I understand why. And so if Bernie is the nominee, then this is the work that needs to be done. If Bernie's not the nominee, the Republicans are going to scream socialism no matter what. And interestingly, if you look at the latest, this is from Axios today. They just did a poll of millennials and Gen Z, younger than millennials, and, you know, compared to Gen X and boomers. And what they found, this is just the total... All of Americans, 66% of all Americans think that government should provide universal health care. Among millennials and Gen Z, it's 73%. All Americans, 56% think government should provide tuition-free to college. Again, these are obvious majority positions, right? This, you know, we call it socialism, call it whatever you want. 67% compared to 56% of all Americans, 67% of millennials and Gen Z want college-free tuition. But then when you pull the socialist word, would you prefer living in a socialist country? Only 37% of Americans say yes. 49% of millennials and Gen Z say yes. And that's without, you know, any definitions or anything beyond that. So, I mean, that's pretty remarkable stuff, that polling right there. So, yeah, I'm with you. You know, we need to be defining democratic socialism on the one hand. But on the other hand, as I think we learned from 72, when Nixon labeled McGovern a socialist and beat him pretty badly, that word still has some potency, and we need to respect that, some negative potency, particularly among people who are over 40 or over 50. So it's a tough one, Peter. It's a real tough one. Stephanie, thanks for the call. Stephanie in Hopkins Park, Illinois. Hey, Stephanie, what's up?
Hey, I talked to a local politician about why he was a Republican. Mm-hmm. He's a black guy. He's a black guy, too, and I asked him why you're still a Republican after all what's going on. And he was, you know, especially with the president lying. And he quoted to me that the president has to lie to get his policies done. I said, well, maybe he should have better policies. He says, no, our job as people is to follow the president. And even if he's wrong, and he has to lie to get what he needs to get done, that we should just not question him. Because every time you question the president, he can't do his job. And wow. So I'm thinking, why would you want somebody not to tell you what they're going to do, to go behind your back and do something that's going to hurt you?
Right.
He said, well, the country is based on those people at the top with the education to do it. And
wow.
If the people at the bottom get hurt, he said, then they have to find a way to pull themselves away from the hurt.
What you are defining, Stephanie, are two cardinal characteristics of modern Republicans. Number one, an embrace of authoritarianism, and number two, an embrace of neo-Calvinism. The authoritarianism is, you know, daddy takes care of us, daddy knows what's best, daddy may even have to lie to us from time to time, but we all do what daddy says. Right. That's George Lakoff says this is the authoritarian father model of a family, as opposed to the collaborative family model where, you know, everybody gets together and works out how, you know, how things are going to be. Mom has a say. Dad has a say. The kids all have a say, which is more the Democratic Party. So you've got that authoritarianism. That's, the first part of what he said. And then the neo-Calvinism. John Calvin back in the 1600s. Was, you know, during the early days of the Enlightenment, was trying to figure out how to justify basically kings continuing to be kings, and he came up with this theory that there were five parts to it, and the core theory is all humans are born in sin because we came out of a woman, and woman was the original sinner. Number one. Number two, God determines even before we're born who's going to be saved. And so number three, the big challenge that we have as people is to figure out who are those people that God has said are going to be saved and who are the people who God has already determined even before they're born are doomed. Because if we're going to put somebody in charge of our government, we want to make it one of the people, the good people, the saved people. And so number four, How do you know who the saved people are? Well, God's external manifestations of his blessing. In other words, they're wealthy or they were born into the royal family. That was God's decision. And so number five, these actually aren't the five tenets of Calvinism, but this is kind of the logic that comes through it. The first three actually are the part from the five tenets of Calvinism. And so finally, you know, therefore we should just kind of go along with what anybody says who is very wealthy or who is born into a royal family, because obviously that's the sign that God wants them to be in charge. And that has, you know, the Republicans have embraced that without the God part and said, you know, basically it's Darwinian, it's survival of the fittest, that being rich and powerful is proof that somebody is smart or they have good genes, to quote Donald Trump. We all know that these are all lies, but these are the lies that Republicans live by. Stephanie, thanks for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's amazing that Stephanie's Republican friend would be that straight up and that honest with her, but that really is how they think. I can tell you, I know these guys. And welcome back. Mark, watching or listening to us in Portland, Oregon on X-Ray FM. Hey, Mark, I was over at the party Friday night. Or Saturday night it was, the fifth anniversary party.
X-ray party.
Yeah, there you go. Were you there?
Oh, no, I live in Salem.
Ah, okay. Oh, yeah, okay. Well, it was great fun. Anyhow, what's up, Mark?
Well, where to start? To answer the question, when you're not willing to really admit and say it out loud what you truly believe, then you substitute a lie. And you'll sell that lie as best you can because you don't want to admit what you truly believe. And this is why, in my opinion, Trump supporters seem so stupid. Because they're not willing to put on the hood and carry the tiki torch on a daily basis and say I'm a racist.
Right.
And so you actually had a gentleman...
Well, hang on just a second, Mark, if I may. What you're suggesting is basically that the Trump supporters accept Trump's lies because they themselves in their private lives have to live lies. They can't tell their friends and neighbors that they're actually, you know, racists and misogynists and you know, whatever. That's why they're in favor of Trump. But if somebody is lying, let me back up just a little bit. Back when I was 19 years old, I got a job as a manager of a GNC store in Okemos, Michigan. And I had to hire people. And we had this honesty test. It was called the Reed Report. And it had questions like, if you knew that your mother had stolen a candy bar from the store, would you call the police and turn her in? And if you answered no, you failed the test. And so I went to my boss, is a guy named Len, who became one of the VPs ultimately of GNC, and I said, I'd have to lie to pass this test. And he said, that's the point. We want people to lie on the honesty test. And I was like, why? Why would you want people to lie on the honesty test? And he said, because it shows that they know the difference between what's right and what's wrong. He said, there's actually a subset of maybe 15 or 20% of the population who literally don't know that it's wrong to steal. And so they would say, you know, no, I wouldn't turn my mother in. And because they don't think that it's a crime. And so we're trying to weed those people out. So the predicate of your comment is that the Trump voters realize that this is wrong. And I'm wondering if that's true all the time.
I think some of them are so embroiled in their culturally. I grew up in Detroit, Michigan, in the heart of the inner city in the late 60s. Mm-hmm. I lived in the middle of some of the most severe racial tension you'll ever experience in your life.
Yeah.
In this country. Okay, so I can only admit for myself that my father was a racist. I lived in a neighborhood that was incredibly split racially. It was driven by real estate people who would call up the white people, say the blacks are coming, sell your house cheap. My neighborhood went from 90% white to about 90% black in about 4 years.
It was called blockbusting.
It is called blockbusting. And then they would sell those homes to overextended black people several times, repossess them, sell them again, repossess them.
Yep.
And then the house would be basically a slum.
Yeah. Mark, we're out of time. You want to summarize real quick?
Yeah, well, the summary is that you had a gentleman on your show who proved by looking at the county demographics that it wasn't the middle class message that Trump went on, it was his racist message.
Oh, yeah.
$70,000 and up.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it was the wealthy white people, by and large, who were the Trump voters. You're absolutely right, Mark. And, yeah, spot on. Mark, thanks a lot for the call. Welcome back. 52 minutes past the hour. Just a reminder, in the next hour, Congressman Ro Khanna will be with us, as he is every other week, taking your calls for the entire hour. So get ready with your questions. Jay in Naperville, Illinois. Hey, Jay, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good.
First time caller. Been listening for a while. So
well, thank you
for taking the call.
Thanks for listening.
I think you guys are right on the money, by the way. This isn't why I called, but I think the reason that Trump's followers follow him so blindly is because they know in their hearts that he's a liar, but they've gone along with it, and that means that he's got them to the end.
That's just my
theory.
It's an interesting one. I mean, it's like I'm guessing that there's probably a bunch of different shades and different layers, and I'm wondering to what extent they're using things like social media, which can highly target people now, to target messages specifically to the really dumb people, the people who are lying to themselves, the people who are racist and that's their shtick, the people who are religious and that's their shtick, the people who are anti-abortion, you know, all these kind of single issue voters or primary issue voters, you know, tailoring messages to them. And, you know, we know that the Republican Party did this in 2016. And we know also, you know, Cambridge Analytica organized this. It was not just also done by the Republican Party. It was apparently done by this group out of Russia, the Internet Research Bureau. Very, very, very tight targeting. I sure hope the Democrats are doing that this time around also. But anyhow, you had a point you wanted to make.
Why I called was the big boogie word socialism. You know,
right.
It seems to me that the 1%, the financial class, the ownership class, whatever you want to call them, it seems to me that they are completely in control of this because, you know, we have, record unemployment, right? If you want a job, you got a job, right? The economy is growing.
Yes and no. If you include part-time jobs and crappy jobs, yeah.
Right, right. But, you know, the numbers that you hear are that unemployment is awesome and the economy is growing, not as fast as the guy in the White House says it would or whatever, but it's, you know, supposedly our economy is doing wonderful.
Right.
And yet, people are turning towards socialist policy possibilities, right?
Right.
And it seems to me that if capitalism were working for them, because most Americans that I know are hardworking people, you know, and they most of them have very simple ambitions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to work hard, you know, just why do I have to constantly be on the razor's edge of financial anxiety every moment of my life, you know?
Right.
So it seems to me that it's like, you know, if they just pay people better, then people would feel like capitalism is working for them. You know,
yeah.
If they were making what they deemed a fair wage for their labor, then they'd be like, no, capitalism's working just fine. I can put a few nickels away at the end of the month and send my kid to college.
And by the way, Jay, ask any old fart my age, and they'll tell you that's pretty much how America viewed things in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and early 80s.
I mean, it seems like if they wanted to make the word and the possibility of socialism go away, they really could. But
yeah.
I think that they don't want to share a red nickel with anybody.
Well, this is why I think that, you know, Nixon soundly beating McGovern in 72 by accusing him of being a socialist. Back in 72, the majority of Americans had a good job. The white middle class was solid. The black middle class was starting to grow in really significant ways, also as a result of the Great Society policies and the Civil Rights Act, Voting Rights Act, and things. And the idea of socialism, you know, and the Soviet Union still called itself the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, right? So socialism was still conflated with communism. And people were not frantic. They were not frightened about their economic future. So they weren't ready to embrace something new. They just wanted what they had to work a little better. And I just don't think that Trump can repeat Nixon's Pat Buchanan playbook. I don't think it's going to work.
Well,
for the reasons that you just identified, I think people are scared now.
I, for one, do not underestimate this person because, quite frankly, I don't think he is even aware of how far he'd be willing to go to keep power.
I think that's true. I think that's true, and I think he's also not aware of how much power he has which is why he says things that are extraordinarily destructive to this country.
He's already laying the foundation of the next election being phony. He's already doing that.
Oh, I know. He's setting up a civil war, basically. It so concerns me. Jay, thank you for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.